The following program is brought to you by the friends and partners of Andrew Womack Ministries, celebrating 40 years of sharing God's unconditional love and grace. Welcome to Gospel Truth with Andrew Womack. Today, Andrew illustrates that whether we believe or whether we have varying levels of unbelief is determined by what we focus our attention on. Now, here's Andrew.
Welcome to our Tuesday's broadcast of the Gospel Truth. Today, I am continuing a series that I've entitled Hardness of Heart, and this is my third week to teach on it. It's my final week. This Friday will be our last day to offer this, and I tell you, this teaching is really powerful. This is one of those foundation things that I use every single day of my life. You just have to stay focused on God. If you don't, your heart becomes insensitive towards Him, or what the Bible calls hardened. And so we've been talking about how bad that situation is, what the effect of it is on you, what causes our heart to be hardened, which is basically just whatever you're focused on, you become sensitive to. Whatever you neglect, you automatically start becoming hardened to. And we have neglected the things of God. Most of us are more occupied with the world and looking and listening to and living in the world than we are living in God. And because of that, our heart has become hardened. And so what I'm dealing with now, I started this yesterday out of Matthew chapter 17, an instance where the disciples of Jesus tried to cast the demon out of a boy who had some kind of a disorder that caused seizures, and they couldn't do it. Now, they had cast demons out before, so they had been successful before, but this time they couldn't do it. And they asked Jesus, why couldn't we cast this demon out? And here's the answer of Jesus in Matthew chapter 17, verse 20. Jesus said unto them, because of your unbelief. I made this point yesterday. I'm not going to belabor it, but I have to point this out because I know there's people watching this program who are reading this out in the NIV. And the NIV says it's because of your little faith. But I might also point out, if you'll look closely, the NIV also doesn't include the 21st verse, the next verse. It just omits it. It's not even there. Let me just say that that's wrong. You don't need to be taking scriptures out of the Bible. And I'm going to make a major point out of this 21st verse. This is not saying it's because of your little faith. It says it's because of your unbelief. And some people think, well, it's the same thing. If you have unbelief, then you don't have much faith. If you have strong faith, then you don't have unbelief. They think that they're mutually exclusive. Most people believe that if you have faith, then there isn't any unbelief. And if you have any unbelief, well, then you don't have any faith. That's not so. Let me present a radical concept to you. And that is that, you know what, you can believe and you can have faith, but your faith can be negated, canceled out because of unbelief. It's like this. If you could imagine a weight in front of me right here, and if you hooked a horse up to that weight, that horse could exert enough power to pull or to drag that weight and to move it. But if you had a horse of equal strength hooked up to the other side, and if both of them pulled at the same time with equal strength, well, then that weight wouldn't move. Even though there was tremendous force being exerted, the forces would cancel out each other. And I believe that this is the way that we need to look at faith and unbelief. They're opposing forces. And some people, they know that they're believing God. They know they have faith. And yet they don't see the right results. And they just can't understand. And to the casual observer, if you don't understand these scriptures and if you haven't seen this revelation that I'm talking about, you will think, well, faith just didn't work because you know you had faith. Let me give you a for instance. You know, I saw a man raised from the dead. I've seen a number of people raised from the dead. And after I saw the first person raised from the dead, I guarantee you, I was excited. I thought, man, this is a piece of cake. Anything else ought to be relatively easy compared to seeing a person raised from the dead. And I remember I was in Omaha, Nebraska, and there was a man that was in a wheelchair, and this was right after I'd seen a man raised from the dead. And I just remember thinking to myself, I could hardly wait on me to get through talking so that I could go over and minister to this guy. Because if you see a guy raised from the dead, you should be able to see him come out of wheelchairs. So I went over there, and after it was over, I grabbed this man by the hand and just grabbed him out of the wheelchair. And this was a big, tall guy. He was over 6 foot tall if he had been standing. And I pulled him, and he came up out of his chair and over like this and just landed flat on his face. And I mean, he was a quadriplegic. He couldn't grab himself. He couldn't protect himself. He just fell on his face. And I tell you what, it just totally shocked me. It humiliated me. People in the crowd gasped, and they just couldn't believe that this had happened. And, you know, I didn't know what to do. And so I got down on the floor. I grabbed this guy, had to hug him and wrestled him back into his wheelchair and said, "Depart in peace, be ye warmed and filled." But I didn't give him what he needed. And it wasn't because I didn't want to. I wanted to, and that's the, I mean, I never expected to see this happen, and yet I didn't see the right results. And so it was very similar to what the disciples did right here. They tried to cast the demon out of this boy, and yet it didn't work. And so they came to Jesus. Why couldn't we do it? Well, you know what? Most people would tell me the reason that this guy wasn't healed is because you didn't have any faith. Now, you know, just think about this. How many of you that don't have any faith would go up and grab a quadriplegic and just yank them out of the chair and see them fall over on their face? You know what? I had faith. And this is what really confused me, because I didn't expect to see this guy not walk. I expected to see him heal. I believed that he was going to be healed. And I had faith, and yet I didn't see the right results. If you are so simplistic that you just think, well, if you believe, everything's going to work. And if it doesn't work, then you didn't believe. Just that simple. And there's a lot of people that present it that way, that it's that cut and dry. You either believe and receive or doubt and do without. That's it. I do believe that that is an option. If a person isn't believing, well, then you aren't going to receive. And so it is true that if you aren't believing, you won't receive. And I agree with that. But I don't believe it's as simple as just saying, if you have faith, then everything's going to work. Because of what Jesus said right here. Unbelief was their problem. They had faith. They had cast other demons out of people. So they believed. And the very reason that they were asking this question is because they did believe. Let's just assume that they were like some religious people today who believe that the miracles passed away with the apostles. Let's say that there was an expiration date on the anointing and the power of God. And if these disciples, you know, if they had believed that, well, as of midnight last night, the miracle power of God isn't being poured out anymore. If they believed something like that, they wouldn't ever have asked this question, why couldn't we cast him out? Because they would have known that they weren't believing for it. The very fact that they were asking the question and that they were bothered by this was because they were believing. There was faith present. And it's wrong to think that if you just believe, then you are always going to see the things happen. No, because faith can be negated. It can be canceled through unbelief. And that's what Jesus is saying. And see, this is a concept that a lot of people don't have. Again, in an effort to emphasize what faith will do and how faith can produce miracles, it's often presented that you just believe, and if you believe, boom, you're going to see miracles. Well, you have to, like Jesus said in Mark chapter 11, verse 23, "Whosoever shall say unto this mountain, be thou removed and be thou cast into the sea, and shall not doubt in his heart, but shall believe that those things which he saith shall come to pass, he shall have whatsoever he saith." Notice it says, "and shall not doubt in their heart." It's not always emphasized, but it's always there. You do, belief will produce results if it isn't counterbalanced. Counteracted, negated by the force of unbelief. And so here is a radical concept. You can believe and disbelieve at the same time. Now, see, that's a thought that a lot of people haven't ever had. That's a new wrinkle in some people's brains. And I can guarantee you, at the time that I grabbed this man by the hand and yanked him out of the wheelchair, I didn't realize that. For one thing, now I realize that the person who you are praying for has to believe too. They have to receive. In the 6th chapter of the book of Mark, in verse 5, it says that Jesus could do no mighty work because of their unbelief. That's putting that verse, the next verse in Matthew chapter 13, verse 58, all of those together. It was the unbelief of the people that stopped Jesus. It didn't say he wouldn't do it. It says he couldn't do it because of their unbelief. You find instances in the fifth chapter of Mark where Jesus went in to raise Jairus' daughter from the dead. And there were people there that were mocking him and laughing at him and making fun. And he had to put all of those people out before he could raise Jairus' daughter from the dead. In the eighth chapter of the book of Mark, you find an instance where he took a blind man and led him by the hand out of the town of Bethsaida, because Bethsaida was one of the most two unbelieving places he had ever been. He put a curse on Bethsaida, and he had to separate that man out from that unbelief. And as soon as he got healed, he told him, don't go back into that town and don't tell it to anybody in that town. Those are three or four instances I've just given you of how even Jesus was limited in what he could do because of the unbelief of other people. And because he was God and operating in the full extent of God, he was able to get around those things by taking the person out of town, by kicking all of the unbelievers out or whatever. But nonetheless, see, I was ignorant of this fact that unbelief can hinder faith. It short circuits faith. It diminishes the power and the ability of faith. And even Jesus had to deal with that. If Jesus had to deal with it, I have to deal with it. You have to deal with it. But see, this example that I gave you where I grabbed this man out of the wheelchair, at that time, I just thought I was believing. And so it didn't matter what he believed. Who cared what he believed? I believe. Well, I've come to realize now that the person who is receiving the healing needs to also believe. And so I approach things differently, and I try and gain a response and get the person I'm praying for to believe. It's not only up to me. If you remember on my program yesterday, I read these verses out of Mark chapter 9, and this is the exact same story that we're reading from Matthew 17. But over in Mark chapter 9, the father of this child said in verse 22, he said, oftentimes it hath cast him into the fire and oft into the waters to destroy him. But if thou canst do anything, have compassion on us and help us. See, this father was trying to put all of the responsibility over on Jesus. Jesus, it's just up to you. Do something if you can. And Jesus refused to accept that kind of responsibility. He said this in verse 23. Jesus said unto him, if thou canst believe, all things are possible to him that believes. Jesus wasn't accepting complete responsibility for this healing. And if Jesus wouldn't accept complete responsibility for a healing, neither can I, neither can you, neither can anybody. I guarantee you, Jesus was the perfect manifestation of God in the flesh. And yet Jesus solicited response from the people he ministered to. You know, I don't want to get off and answer this. Let me just say some things real quickly. Somebody says, well, what about the guy that was raised from the dead in the city of Nain? Jesus went to the mother that was in that funeral procession and told her to stop weeping before he raised the son from the dead. If all he wanted to do was to stop her from weeping, why didn't he just raise the son from the dead and then present the son to her alive, and that would have stopped her from weeping? You know, if you'd use your brain for something besides a hat rack, you could get revelation out of the Bible. Why does God do things? He went and spoke to that woman because he needed somebody in a position of authority in his life to exert some faith. He told her to quit weeping before there was a reason to quit weeping. In other words, it was a response of faith. Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead, but he spoke to his sisters first, and he says, if you can believe, all things are possible to him that believes, in John chapter 11. And so Jesus, it may be a little bit subtle, but if you'll look, he always had to have faith in the person who was receiving the healing. When he healed this man that was blind, that was begging at the temple, Jesus put spit on the ground and made clay out of it and put it on his eyes and told him to go to the pool of Siloam and wash. That was 3/4 of a mile through a busy city street, a blind man trying to navigate crowds of people in a Jerusalem street. Why did God tell him to do that? Some people think it's just because God's weird and he always does things in ways that just throw you off so you can't make a pattern out of it. You know, the God that created such system in this universe, such order, is not disorderly himself. There's a reason why he does things. And the reason why he put that clay on that man's eyes and told him to walk, navigate 3/4 of a mile through the city streets of Jerusalem and wash it off is because that man needed to do something in faith. That man could have wiped that spit off and thrown it on the ground and gone back to begging. But you know what? He got up and acted on the word that Jesus gave him. In every instance, there needs to be faith present. But even Jesus had to deal with the power of unbelief that comes against his word. And as I said in Mark chapter 6, verse 5, he couldn't do many mighty works because of their unbelief. He had to separate people from the multitudes. And he did that same thing with this man right here in Mark chapter 9. In the next verse, after he had kind of rebuked this man and said, if you can believe, all things are possible to him that believes. In verse 24, the man said straightway, the father of the child cried out and said with tears, Lord, I believe. Help thou my unbelief. Notice what the father said. The father says, Lord, I believe. I've got faith, but I'm struggling with unbelief too. He was saying, I've got faith and unbelief. Now, again, that's a concept that is not really embraced or understood by most people today. Most people would say that if you've got any unbelief, then you aren't believing God. This man said, I am believing God, but I'm struggling with unbelief at the same time. Jesus didn't rebuke him. Jesus didn't say that isn't right. Jesus didn't preach a sermon to him. Jesus just took the faith that he had and used it and cast the demon out of this boy. And so here is a tremendous truth. You can believe and disbelieve at the same time. You can believe with part of your heart and then the other part of your heart have fear and unbelief. That's the reason the Bible says in Acts chapter 8 where Philip told the Ethiopian eunuch, if you believe with all of your heart, you may be baptized. You know, you can just believe with part of your heart. And brothers and sisters, this is where the vast majority, I mean the vast majority, I don't know a scripture that puts a figure on it, but my personal opinion dealing with people is 90-something percent of all believers have faith, but they have so much unbelief over here that counteracts and negates their faith that they aren't getting the right results. And now they're perplexed because they know they've got faith. That's like me. When I grabbed this man out of the chair, I guarantee you I had faith. You don't do stuff like that if you don't have faith. You either have to be crazy or you got to have faith. And some of you might believe I'm crazy, amen. But I choose to believe that it's I have faith. And I had faith. I was expecting that man to be healed. There was faith present, but when that man fell on his face and I heard the gasp of unbelief and the groans of fear, you know what? It pricked my heart. There was unbelief present. And instead of just persisting and trying to get that man to believe, you know what? I caved. And I did the best I knew how to do, but I wasn't able to get him healed. You know, in contrast to this, I don't think I have time to give the whole story. I may have to continue this. But a man named Smith Wigglesworth, who saw a lot of miraculous things happen and many people raised from the dead, he died around 1949. But in the early part of the 1900s, he was a powerful minister and saw great healings. Smith Wigglesworth saw things that were contrary to what he was believing for. But he didn't cave the way that I did when people criticized him. He was hardened, not towards God, but hardened towards people's opinions. Hardened towards criticism, or you could say hardened towards unbelief. He used to start his meeting by saying, the very first person to come up here will be healed of whatever disease you've got. And he'd pray for him and see him healed. And this would encourage people. And then he'd teach about how faith worked. And then he'd have his healing line where he prayed for multiple people. And because this was done on a regular basis, there were these two ladies who had a friend of theirs, an elderly woman who had cancer, and she had a tumor that made it look like she was like 9 months pregnant. And she had this cancerous tumor. And so when he said, the first person to get up here will be healed, they immediately got up on the stage and they were standing there holding their friend up in between them. And Smith Wigglesworth just spoke to him and said, let her go. And they said, we can't let her go. She can't stand on her own. And I mean, he just raised his voice and he said, I said, let her go. And they let her go and she fell forward and landed on that tumor. and let out this groan. And of course, people in the audience groaned and sighed. Just exactly the same response that I had when I grabbed this man out of a wheelchair and he fell on his face. But you know what the difference is? See, I had faith. Smith had faith. But the difference is when people groaned and when negative things happened, I caved in and unbelief overcame my heart. You know how Smith responded? He said, "Pick her up." And so they picked this woman up. And there she was standing in between her friends again. He said, "Let her go." And they said, "We can't let her go." And he yelled at him, "I said, let her go." And so they let her go and boom, here she falls on that tumor again. Lets out another groan. People in the crowd are groaning and mumbling and talking. Well, I caved in the very first time it happened. Here it happened to Smith twice. How did he respond? He said, "Pick her up." So they picked her up. She was standing in front of her, in between her friends again. And he said, "Let her go." And they said, "We aren't going to let her go." And he said, "I said, let her go." And a man in the audience stood up and he yelled out and he said, "You beast, leave that poor woman alone." And Smith yelled at him and he says, "You mind your business. I know my business." And he yelled at those women and said, "Let her go." And they let her go and she started to fall, but she caught herself, walked out. That tumor just fell right out of her dress. I don't know how it happened. It was miraculous. God just somehow or another, the tumor disconnected, fell on the stage and she walked off healed. Let me present to you a thought here that will be just radical to many of you. Smith Wigglesworth didn't have 1 ounce more faith than I had. You know the difference? He had less unbelief. That's what Jesus was saying right here. Why couldn't we cast him out? Because of your unbelief. He didn't say it's because you don't have enough faith. He said, no, if your faith is only the size of a mustard seed, that's enough to see the miracle you desire come to pass. You don't need more faith. You just need less unbelief. And see, most of us aren't even trying to deal with our unbelief. We haven't even seen how unbelief counterbalances and negates faith. We just allow huge, huge, huge amounts of unbelief over here in our life. And what we're trying to do is to build our faith up and to get stronger in faith. The scripture says that a little leaven will leaven the whole lump. A little bit of unbelief will stop a lot of faith. The only way you're ever going to receive, if you just allow huge amounts of fears and doubts and unbelief that comes through being plugged into this world and listening to their stuff, the only way you're ever going to overcome the levels of unbelief that most of us allow in our life is to go to your church and get the prayer chain praying. And you're going to have to get hundreds and hundreds or maybe thousands of people to multiply and pool their faith together and combine all of this faith to overcome the unbelief. Another way of dealing with that is just get rid of the unbelief that's in your life, and a little mustard seed amount of faith is enough to see a mountain cast into the sea without ever touching it by just speaking to it. Faith is that powerful if it isn't diluted by unbelief. And I tell you, very few people understand that unbelief stops and hinders faith like that. And so they just allow huge amounts of unbelief in their life. And then when they don't see the right results, they go and say, "Lord, why couldn't we cast him out?" The answer is, it's our unbelief. We aren't ever going to live a life that where our faith is so strong it can overcome just huge amounts of unbelief. We need to start dealing with the unbelief levels in our life. You know, I've got a lot more to share on this, and I'm going to continue this on my program tomorrow, so I encourage you to listen in. But also, you need to get this teaching. This is a keeper. This is something that will help you. I've got a book on this. I've got CDs on it. I've got DVDs. Please listen as our announcer gives you that information, and then call or write today and receive these materials.
Andrew's 4-part teaching titled Hardness of Heart is available in a CD album or in a DVD album as seen on Andrew's daily TV broadcast. Each is offered for a gift of any amount to the work of this ministry. Ask for number T1003 when you contact us. And be sure to specify the CD album or the As Seen on TV DVD album. Andrew's book titled Hardness of Heart is also available for a gift of any amount. Ask for item T303 when you write or call. The 4th teaching in the audio CD album, The Cure, is also available for a donation of any amount. We encourage everyone to send a gift, but if you're simply unable to afford it, Andrew and his partners will provide this fourth CD free of charge. Request teaching number TK59 when you write or call, and we'll be pleased to send it to you. You can use your credit card when you order by telephone. Our helpline number is 719-635-1111. Helpline hours are from 4 a.m. until 9:30 p.m. Mountain Time. Again, that number is 719-635-1111. Or you can order ministry materials on our website 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at awmi.net. There, you'll not only find materials from today's broadcast, but you'll discover a wealth of resources free for you to download for yourself and share with others. There are over 400 teachings at your fingertips, and more than 7 years of TV broadcast you can view right there on the web. There's also over 10 years of radio programs available for download as MP3 or for you to listen to online. Again, it's free as you navigate through the web pages of awmi.net. If you prefer to write to us, our address is Andrew Womack Ministries, P.O. Box 3333, Colorado Springs, Colorado 80934. We hope to hear from you today.
I pray that these truths are helping you the way that they've helped me. I tell you, this has changed my life. And I know that many of you are just saying, man, this is revelation. And you desire to get more of it. Well, of course, our books, our tapes, our DVDs are all built for that. But you know, really the most in-depth ministry that we have, and I guarantee you it is life-changing, is our Bible college. We have not only 12 different Bible colleges scattered around the world, but we have correspondence course. We are in the process of coming up with a distance learning course over the internet. There's a number of ways that you can take advantage of our Caris Bible colleges and get more in-depth into the Word. And so please call the number that you see on your screen and inquire today.
We'd like to point out Andrew's upcoming speaking schedule. He'll be in Colorado Springs for the annual Caris Bible College Men's Advance, February 5th through the 7th, Houston, Texas, February 12th through the 14th, and in Atlanta, Georgia, March 5th through the 7th. He'll also be in Colorado Springs for the Caris Bible College Weekend, March 12th through the 14th, and in Merritt Island, Florida, April 19th through the 22nd. For more details on Andrew's next meeting in your area, call our helpline or visit our website at awmi.net.
I'd like to give all the men watching a special invitation to join me on February the 5th through the 7th here at our headquarters in Colorado Springs for a men's advance. We're going to have big 6'7" Dave Hinton leading praise and worship. And I tell you, he was just at our minister's conference and he stole the show. He is awesome. I'm going to be teaching the Word. Also, Wendell Parr, the director of our Caris Bible College, will be ministering. We have a lot of fun activities and chili suppers, and I think we're going to go bowling. And it's just a great, great time, and we always see men's lives change. So remember that this is February the 5th through the 7th, right here at our headquarters in Colorado Springs.